Hey there, if you like true crime stories, and you love being in the great outdoors, you have come to the right place. Welcome to Crime Off the Grid. Hello everyone, here we are again with another episode of Crime Off the Grid. I'm Tara.
And I'm Nancy.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And hey, I wanted to thank everyone who answered the Instagram story question of what's your favorite episode. And the winner is, or, you know, who got the most mentions? Nancy, can you guess which episode got the most mentions?
It had to be something stinky. I don't know.
You would be right. It was the Crisco Kid.
Which that one was
kind of surprised me because a lot of people told me I couldn't make it through that whole thing. And then a lot of people were like, that was hilarious. So that just told me a lot of you are about as weird as we are.
No doubt.
And the runner up to the Crisco Kid was Ranger Tales, which they didn't say which specific one, but I'm hearing you. We're hearing you. We're going to have more Ranger Tales coming up. And after that one was The Joker's Demise. And an honorable mention, a couple of honorable mentions were for The Hippie Cannibal.
Oh yeah, lovely.
Yeah, and so those are all my favorites too. So yeah, we appreciate all of your responses. So if you're a new listener, please go back and catch those episodes.
Absolutely.
And the last business we're going to discuss before we get started with today's case, we asked you last episode, and then I think via social media, if any of you have had a close encounter of the crime kind in a wild place. So we'd love to hear your story, however long or brief, if you're willing to share. We'll read it here, and we're happy to keep you anonymous if you prefer. So please send your story to crimeoffthegrid@gmail.com, or you can go into our website at crimeoffthegrid.com and send it through the send a message port there. So anyway, Nancy, where's our story from today?
So our story takes place in the Talladega National Forest, which is 1 mile from Chia State Park, which Chia State Park will come into play during this case. So the Talladega National Forest is located in Alabama, and it covers 392,567 acres. And I can break that down for you. It's 613.39 square miles at the southern edge of the Appalachian Mountains.
Oh.
Chia Mountain is the highest point in Alabama, which is located in the Talladega National Forest. Before the forest was purchased by the federal government in the 1930s, the area encompasses the Talladega was extremely logged and represented some of the most abused, eroded wastelands in all of Alabama. The pine forest regrowth now hosts a diverse ecosystem and has made a great comeback. Some of the wildlife that inhabit the forest include coyote, black bear, white-tailed deer, fox, bobwhite quail, squirrel, turkey, rabbit, raccoon, and various waterfowl.
Okay. Well, this is how ignorant I am. When I heard, I didn't even know Alabama had any national forests, and that's so cool that they do. I didn't even know that. But when I heard Talladega, the only thing I associated with that is Talladega Nights. It's a, I don't know if you saw that movie, Nancy, with Will Ferrell.
I saw some clips of it.
Well, Will Ferrell, his name is Ricky Bobby. Of course, Southern race car driver, Ricky Bobby. And he says the blessing before the meal, dear Lord, baby Jesus. Anyway, it's because he likes the Christmas Jesus. And so he says the blessing before the meal to dear Lord, baby Jesus. Anyway, funny movie.
and also there's four national forests in Alabama.
Oh my gosh.
You must not have spent too much time there when you were growing up.
No, I mean, I'm from Tennessee, and we drove through there on our way to the panhandle of Florida for vacation. I had no idea. I did not know. And that's about it.
There you go.
Well, our story begins on August 14th, 2022, around 11:30 a.m. law enforcement officers responded to a 911 call reporting a shooting at a wooded area off a U.S. Forest Service road in the Talladega National Forest near Chia State Park, which I think was outside of Lineville, Alabama. Upon arrival, they saw a white male victim lying dead from one gunshot wound to the abdomen. He was identified as Adam Simji, who was 22 years old. Adam's girlfriend, a white female 20 years old, and we'll just refer to her as Michaela, she was there and had witnessed this crime. And now Michaela is in the woods with the person who is still there, who had just shot her boyfriend. When the police arrived and the paramedics got there, Michaela pointed at the woman and told the responding officers she shot him. That woman was identified as Yasmin Marie Adele Hider, H-I-D-E-R. She's a black female, and she was sitting several feet away against a fallen pine tree with four gunshot wounds, three to the abdomen and one to the upper right leg. Well, that day began with Adam and Michaela looking for waterfalls in Chia State Park. They had been traveling and camping in Adam's 2010 white Chevrolet Uplander van when Hider flagged the couple down and said she needed help with her broken down vehicle, a blue XB Scion, which was located about an eighth of a mile away. I had to look up that car. I didn't know what one of those was. It's one of those
boxy cars. Yeah, I've never heard of it either.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kind of real boxy. But anyway, Michaela and Adam agreed to help, and they were just being good Samaritans. They got out and went with Hider to the broken down car. Adam had a pistol, and as he got out, he put it in his waistband, and he told Michaela he grabbed it just in case they might be getting robbed. Michaela's dad was a mechanic, and she was actually able to call him for some advice. And, you know, they worked with him for a while. He gave them some things to try, and of course, they tried to jumpstart it. And her dad even sent links to some YouTube videos he thought might help. They even tried a few things, and nothing would get it to turn over. Spoiler, it was not going to turn over no matter what they did. Hider was sitting in the driver's...
Wait, do we ever hear what was wrong with the car? I mean...
What I read was it had been broken down for weeks, and it was, it was not going to turn over.
Gotcha. Okay.
Hider was sitting in the driver's seat, turning the key and trying to get it to turn over. And Michaela was still looking for more videos that might help, but they just couldn't get the vehicle to start. Meanwhile, Hider, while sitting in the driver's seat of the car, pulled a gun. She got out and pointed the gun at Adam and Michaela, ordering them to empty their pockets and to walk further into the woods. Michaela had only the keys to the van and her cell phone, which she threw on the ground as commanded. Adam didn't have anything on his person except the gun, which was concealed in his waistband. And he told Hider, hey, everything we have is in the van and you can have it. Hider took Michaela's cell phone. And then this is weird. I don't know how smart this is. Recorded herself asking for their banking information, phone passwords, credit card numbers, and their personal identification numbers. And side note, this was all preserved for the cops to see later. So that wasn't too smart. At one point, Hider looked away and lowered her guard. Adam pulled the pistol from his waistband and ordered Hider to drop her weapon. Hider said, quote, are you serious? End quote. And she cocked her gun and started firing, and Adam returned fire simultaneously while falling to the ground. While on the ground, Adam said, you shot me, and fired one last time at Hider. After the shooting stopped, Hider said, why did you shoot? It wasn't supposed to be like this. Then she started calling out to her friend. Apparently, there was another woman hiding in the woods, and called out to her for help. And she was later identified as Crystal Diane Pinkins, P-I-N-K-I-N-S. And Michaela saw Pinkins there in the woods, close to where the shooting took place. Pinkins said to Hider, what do you want me to do? Then Pinkins ran off in the woods. Michaela picked up her phone and called 911. And while she was on the phone with 911, Adam began losing consciousness. The dispatch advised Michaela to apply pressure with a cloth and start chest compressions if Adam stopped breathing. So Michaela takes off her shirt, to use as the cloth. Remember, this is August. It's probably really, really hot there. She didn't have anything else. And so then she had to start chest compressions when he stopped breathing. And that's when the cops and paramedics arrived and took over life-saving efforts. But Adam was soon pronounced dead at the scene.
Tara, can you imagine doing all that? I mean, your boyfriend, your love of your life has just been shot. And the gal that shot him can't move. And she's, you know, several feet away from you. And you're trying to stop the bleeding. You're trying to talk to dispatch. You're trying to, you know, you start, you know, CPR. I mean, I can't even imagine that nightmare.
And you know somebody else is in the woods. So the fear of trying to, and I just want to say a shout out to the dispatchers just in general. And this dispatcher in particular, it's really hard on them as well. They're very well trained, and to talk her through what to do and tell her how to do CPR, it's really a hard job on their end because they feel helpless too. They suffer some trauma too, just like cops and other first responders do. But so anyway, just shout out to dispatchers.
Yeah, absolutely. I used to dispatch for a time, and you're feeling, I mean, you do the best you can, you give them information that they need, but then you're just kind of in the dark. You know, you just kind of sit there and hope for the best for them. And yeah, that I just can't even imagine. That is so awful. So responding officers, they arrested Hyder at the scene. And, you know, as we talked about, she was unable to escape, you know, due to her injuries. And she got shot, and this is amazing. She got shot 3 times in the abdomen and 1 time in the upper leg, which smashed her femur, courtesy of Adam, and which caused her not to be able to run away. But for him to be shot at and return, simultaneously shoot, but then the last one, I don't, you know, we don't know where that last one hit, but I mean, he got her 4 times basically, you know, in the body and in the legs. I mean, that's just incredible for the adrenaline flowing in him to, you know, be able to shoot like that. I don't know how far away they were from each other, but yeah, I thought that to be kind of amazing.
Yeah, I got the impression that he might have had some training or done a lot of firearms training to be able to pull that off.
Yeah, because he was definitely in favor of the Second Amendment, and that goes to show you why he was in favor of that. But yeah, so I agree. He must have had some type of training because that was pretty amazing that he could land all 4 shots like that. So, you know, in the initial investigation, it revealed that the second black female suspect that was present during the robbery, like you said, she fled on foot. And so she must have been standing at the tree line when the shots were fired. And then Hyder was, after she got shot, of course, was calling her to help her, you know, come and help me. And she just turned around, and Pinkins turned around and ran into the woods. So yeah, I'm not sure how Michaela saw her. Later we'll know that what happened to Pinkins in this story. But yeah, just a lot going on, and it happens in a split second, a lot of that stuff, you know, that was going on. So Hyder, you know, she's laying on the ground nearby, suffered several gunshot wounds to the torso. Medical personnel were unable to revive Adam. And then they, I'm sure, focus, you know, the attention on her, because obviously you go to the worst first. So she was transported from the scene by ambulance to a nearby landing zone. And then she was airlifted to the Birmingham Hospital, where she underwent surgery for her injuries. At the time of the incident, though, Hyder said that the pair, I'm sure they're referring to Pinkins and Hyder, lived in a base camp, is what they call it, in the woods, along with Pinkins, you know, 5-year-old son lived there too. And it wasn't far from where Adam was killed that this robbery actually took place. And when Hyder was interviewed, she was, of course, saying it was Pinkins' idea, it was Pinkins' gun, you know, everything was pointed to Pinkins, set all this up. And obviously, it went awry because Adam showed up with his own gun to a gunfight, which is kind of, we've been told that's what you're supposed to do. So anyway, they said that they needed money to eat, and that was where the plan was hatched because they didn't have any. So anyway, once she's arrested and she's flown off, so now it took 6 hours for officers to locate Pinkins at the base camp. And I think, Tara, the reason, you know, we talked about it before, is it took so long is there's a lot of agencies involved in this.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, and they had heard that there was, you know, all these tents in this city and everybody had weapons and things like that. So, I mean, they were coming loaded for bear to take right. care of the situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
But helicopters and search dogs and just a whole list of agencies. And one of them that I remember reading was the Forest Service and also, you know, the local law enforcement, the FBI and SWAT teams. And I mean, it just went on and yeah. on in several counties that responded to help,
yeah.
you know, as well. So
they got to set up a perimeter and
yeah.
initially. And yeah, there was a lot that went into
you don't know what you're walking into,
right.
you know, so you want to be prepared for just about anything that you're going to encounter, you know, in the woods yeah. there. So the tracking team, they led law enforcement to a large group of tents that's been set up on the national forest in what appeared to be what they called was the base camp. And the camp was approximately a half a mile from the scene of the robbery where Adam was shot. So as law enforcement were approaching the base camp, they observed this black female standing near the tents. And officers are ordering her, get on the ground. And as they were doing that, a five-year-old child runs out of the woods and he's holding a loaded mm. shotgun. And law enforcement, you know, they told him, put the shotgun down. And however, he keeps running. I mean, he keeps running towards the female's location. And just before he gets to her, he lays the gun on the ground.
And well, then, he was probably dragging that gun. How does a five-year-old even carry a shotgun, run, let alone run with it?
Well, exactly. Exactly. That's, I thought about that too. And I'm like, wow, you know, a shotgun is not that light when you're,
no.
you know, and you're 5 years old and you're running through the woods yeah. with it. So it was determined that the child was indeed Pinkin's son. And so, you know, probably not knowing how this woman's involved or anything like that, because this is the first time they encounter her, they arrested her and charged her with endangering the welfare of a child. And yeah. then, of course, called in the Department of Human Resources and they took custody of the child. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure they're like, okay, you know, she's standing here, we don't know and who she is or what she's done. And so, yeah, that was probably a good reason to hook her up.
That poor five-year-old, I was just thinking about this, how scared that kid was left alone for however long. I mean, a half a mile away is where Mom and Yasmin Hyder went to do the robbery, and that kid's left alone. And they're like, here's a shotgun for you for protection or something. How scared that kid had to be. And then when Mom gets back and he's ordered to the ground and these big people dressed in SWAT gear screaming, drop the gun. How horrific that was for that little kid. And that makes me just as mad as what they did to Adam.
Yeah. And, you know, you think about it. So it was at least a half an hour that they were trying to fix the vehicle. And like you said, it's a half a mile hike to where they went. And that probably wasn't the first vehicle that stopped. I mean, I think we read that there was another female that stopped and just was not comfortable listening to their story and, you know, left.
Right.
So you got to think that this kid was left and probably not even stayed in the tent if he went hiding in the woods. And maybe when the gunshots started the fire, maybe then he ran into the woods, you know. But yeah, I mean, he had to be scared to death.
Here, little Billy, here's some goldfish. Here's some goldfish crackers and a shotgun, you know.
Exactly.
We'll be back shortly. Here's some goldfish crackers and a shotgun.
Oh, man.
It appears that Hyder and Pinkins were fans of a growing religious sect called the University of Cosmic Intelligence, or also called UCI, which critics describe as a conspiracy theory cult. And what cult doesn't spew conspiracy theories? And that kind of by definition, what a cult is, I think.
Yeah.
The group's leader, named Rashad Jamal White, commonly known as Rashad Jamal, is out of Atlanta and is also considered a social media influencer. He's a rapper and guru whose teachings mix New Age mysticism, polygamy, of course, polygamy. Isn't that always part of the cult as well?
Yes.
And
yes,
it says Afrocentric and Black nationalist ideas. Jamal and his followers believe that they are demigods descended from aliens. Okay. I don't know. Adherents refer to themselves as gods and goddesses. And Rashad Jamal especially insisted on being called God. And he was known to everybody there as God. So the UCI, hey, I wonder if they have a mascot since it's a university.
I don't know.
No, maybe they have a cheer.
That's a good question.
Who are you? We are Area 52. Go Martians.
Right, a theme song. There you go. Yes.
Did you get it? We are Area 52. I threw that in there. Do you know what Area 52 is? Where all the aliens and the, you know.
Oh, area. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I've heard of it. Yes.
Yeah. Go Martians. Anyway, UCI is prolific on social media and has what appears to be like this, a growing following. So the University of Cosmic Intelligence teaches that humans receive energy from the sun, that the government or other forces control the weather, and that aliens visited ancient civilizations. All right. There are new age conspiracy theories about ancient alien races, government cover-ups, and anti-vax conspiracies. And by the way, this is all going on. This cult was kind of really growing during COVID. Big surprise.
Yeah.
And part of their anti-vax conspiracies involved something about government robots coming to homes and forcing vaccinations.
Hmm.
Oh, and fun fact, the leader, Rashad Jamal, is currently being held and charged with molesting an ex-girlfriend's child. He's also got a lengthy rap sheet and has pled guilty to, among other crimes, battery and strangulation and suffocation.
I read the strangulation thing and thought of our last or our Yosemite one. And I'm just like, there you go. It was incredible. Yes.
Well, and throw in probably the polygamy involved sexual assault. You know, I doubt there was.
Yeah.
Everything was consensual on his part. But both women were seemingly leading unremarkable lives not long before that. Yasmin Haider was moving into her college dorm in her Oklahoma college. She was raised by a tight-knit extended family who all just burst with pride and excitement when she began college at the same university some of them had attended. Pinkins, meanwhile, was about 36 years old and listed herself on LinkedIn as a certified home health aide, where she wrote that she worked for the same company in Tennessee for 9 years, although that I don't think that's been confirmed. That's just what she had on her LinkedIn profile. And Pinkins.
Sorry.
That's okay. Every time it's almost like we should just keep putting that in there. Just leave it alone. trying to get Nancy to save some lives. Okay. Pinkins also listed herself on social media as a, quote, freelance writer and aspiring motivational speaker, end quote. And both women seemingly became interested in more esoteric ideas in recent years, specifically following social media accounts focused on Black sovereignty and freedom from mainstream systems of thought and social control, New Age flavored spiritual empowerment in various conspiracy theories, as we said before. Haider changed her Instagram handle sometime in the last 2 years previous to the incident from Y_Haider to, quote, cosmic goddess. By the way, I tried to look up Yasmin on Instagram by her name, cosmic goddess. And I'm just going to say, I'm gonna save you some time. I don't recommend doing that. And while I could not ascertain which one belonged to her, there are like 100 names called something goddess, cosmic goddess, goddess. And they're all strange. I'm just saying, I don't know. That never occurred to me. Maybe they're all people part of this cult because they have a big social media thing. Maybe they just all call themselves goddess, something goddess.
I just can't fathom how a college student just starting out, and then this other gal that's a home health nurse, if that's what she was, or home health care,
yeah,
how it gets turned around that quickly.
I really don't
belong to these two.
I don't understand that either. And there are seemingly normal and educated people who get involved in cults, and even cults as crazy as this one. And I think, well, so Yasmin and Hyder and Pinkins were partners. And I don't know, sometimes when you have someone that you are enamored with and they share the crazy YouTube videos and tell you to pay attention to these YouTube videos, and you just still both go down this rabbit hole somehow. And it could have been during the time, you know, in COVID when people are, I think a lot of people ended up following some conspiracy theories, you know, people were isolated, et cetera. So I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but during the time that she was still in Oklahoma working at Walmart while she was going to school, she was mm-hmm. asking for other spiritually conscious people in their region to contact her. She said, quote, "It's coming," she said without elaboration in one video from that time. Of course, I tried to find that video and I couldn't. And I started having weird things pop up on my phone. And I don't, can you get a virus on an iPhone? I don't know.
I don't know
if you can, but it was weird. So
yeah,
she said, "It's getting close. I am lost myself and I need a tribe of people to gather information and figure it out together, because that's the true way of life and getting back to how we originally were," end quote. And it would appear that this belief seemed to have led them somehow into the woods of Alabama, attempting to live off the grid. Okay, this is my personal opinion, but not everybody, so I don't want any emails that say, "No, my uncle lived completely off the grid." But I'm just going to say, people who, quote, want to live off the grid, seems to me they survive by breaking into people's cabins in the woods. They survive by robbing or panhandling. They survive mm-hmm. by not eating berries and nuts. I'm just saying.
Right. And if they don't have any money, they're shoplifting.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, they're stealing to get food.
Yeah. So I think for some people who say they're living off the grid, I think they're just hiding from society or hiding from the cops for whatever reason. Yeah.
Right. Right. So let's tell our listeners about a little bit about the victims. So these two, Adam and Michaela, they're college sweethearts. And they were on a road trip in their van, traveling throughout all of Alabama in celebration of their next journey together. And Michaela and Adam had been planning their trip for a while ahead of actually starting it. And then they wanted to do something before their fall semester started at the University of Central Florida, where they both went to school. They're both natives of a town of Apopka. Is that how you say that, Tara? Apopka, Florida?
I don't know.
And it's just northwest of Orlando. And they were traveling the area looking for hiking trails and waterfalls. Hmm. That was one of their favorite things to do. So Adam was due to enter into the finance program at the school, and Michaela was working on her master's in counseling. So they had been together for 4 years. And in an interview, 20-year-old Michaela described 22-year-old Adam as always making jokes and being goofy. She said everyone who met him loved him. She and Adam were soulmates, life partners. She said, "The future father of my children." Adam loved being in the forest, in the mountains, and just enjoyed getting out and finding those special places to be. Michaela said she always felt safe with him. He always made her feel safe. He told her he was her protector. And she said, "He died saving my life." Yeah. He died a hero.
Well.
So it's just that part too is just heartbreaking. And then to go back and think of what Michaela had to go through to try and save his life during that whole ordeal is just, it's incredible.
Well, the thing about this story that kind of causes me stress, and this is a situation or scenario that we always worry about, and it causes you to not want to stop and help somebody who's really in need because of situations like this. But it's not a scenario that I haven't thought about many, many times before. And we had this discussion where, as Rangers, especially on night shift, we would play. I always did this driving. It was 1 o'clock in the morning and I'm, you know, driving in the remote middle of nowhere, Yellowstone. And I play What If, and I think most cops do that, but I'm like, what if there's someone flagging me down for help, et cetera, you know, and here it is 1 a.m. I'm worried about ambush, being ambushed. This is something that just we play in our heads all the time. And maybe because we also had a scenario one time that we had to do in our training where we got ambushed. Everybody flunked it. Every single person flunked it. But that stuck with me. So you probably did the same thing.
Oh, absolutely. Driving around and just, yeah, a pullout or a campsite. You know, what do I do if someone jumps out and, you know, they're bleeding or they're just flagging you down because they need help? Yeah. What do you do?
I don't know. I'm kind of trying to think of like, what would be some good advice to give people so that, you know, people who really need help can get help. And what I feel like I would do is if I saw this person come out of the woods or standing on the road and flag me down, I mean, that's really hard because this was broad daylight too. And you just think there's a woman there. And we always kind of feel a little safer when somebody's some woman is asking for help. But at the same time, I mean, I think something you could do is crack your window down and say, I'm going to go up here and call the police for you and then I'll be right back, or something like that. But, you know, now we know, you know, you're just very vulnerable when you get out, but always, always. And this is part of like my training too. Somebody I don't know, I don't feel comfortable ever turning my back on somebody. Like, I'd rather stand behind them. But at the same time, they were fixing her or looking under the hood of her vehicle and she's in the driver's seat. So they're facing each other. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts? Like, what would you advise people who are in the middle of nowhere and this scenario happens?
Well, I advised my son, my oldest son, when he came home from college, and he went to college in North Dakota his first year. And that was when the big oil boom was going on up in North Dakota. And, you know, there's a lot of undesirables that were headed that way. And so I always told him, if somebody's on the highway and they're flagging you down, I said, you do not stop. Because he's by himself and he's a young guy.
Yeah.
I said, you do not stop, but pick up your, you know, go a little further ahead, pull over, call 911 and tell him what you saw and that someone's trying to flag you down. And I said, but do not stop. It is not worth it,
right,
in my opinion, for him to stop and get ambushed like that.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, my advice to him. And in fact, one time he was at a gas station and he was getting gas and a young gal came up and asked him if she could have a ride. And he politely, you know, turned her down. And well, come to find out, she wasn't traveling alone. There was a big guy with her, but off,
right, you know,
a ways off, so that if he would have said yes, she would have said, oh, here, let my friend come too. And then worry, you know, then you're in trouble, as far as I'm concerned. So he did listen to me. I mean, he said no, and he got in his fueled up and got in his car and he left the area. So, yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate that this day and age, that's what we have to do. But I think that's the best way to stay the safest.
Yeah. And I just think that kind of like we did when we were patrolling late at night, just have a plan. This is a, you know, a pretty possible scenario. Just have a plan. How would you handle this? And I think that's just one thing we can do to keep ourselves a little bit safer.
You know, one thing for us, you know, we would get on the radio and say, hey, dispatch, somebody's flagging me down.
Right.
Give a description of them before we even put it in park or get out of the car.
Yeah.
Where, you know, other people don't have that luxury.
Right. Or even in cell service. And I think in this situation too, they probably weren't driving 35, 40, 50 miles an hour for a service road. So they're probably driving 15 miles an hour. And so it's a little bit harder to say, just to go on by. It's really awkward. And that's the way we as humans kind of, you know, we're like, oh, I don't want to hurt their feelings. That's a little harder to do. And so I guess that's where I would be like, crack the window, say, I'm going to get help and call it good on that. But, you know, in this case, there were so many victim impacts that this murderer left in her wake. And besides Adam being the victim of homicide, you know, ultimate being a victim of death, his parents and siblings are the legal victims of crime, and they were entitled to all rights and services. And these would be federal victims of crime and federal victims' rights. And of course, Michaela was a victim of a violent crime herself. She was a victim of a kidnapping, robbery, and attempted murder. And because the crime occurred in Alabama, she was able to, and I know she did get, crime victims' compensation to help cover her out-of-pocket loss. But what I noticed, she was still at a great financial loss because of this crime, and Alabama is very much on the low end of what they will reimburse a crime victim. And they're lower than most states. I just kind of, I started comparing Alabama to almost every state. And I'm like, come on. All the money, all the funding to help victims of crime comes from the Crime Victims Fund, which is provided to all states in the form of grants. And so each state has their own legislation that determines how much they can provide to victims of crime. And so I was very disappointed to hear how poorly Alabama's crime victims compensation program really is, because her financial burden was huge, and she had lost wages, you know, trying to, like, they were living in Florida. And so she has to travel back and forth to Alabama for trial or court hearings. And she had costs for counseling, trauma counseling. And so there was had to be a GoFundMe page to help her with some costs, because Alabama didn't cover much, sadly.
Yeah, that's too bad. So both Hyder and Pinkins were charged. Pinkins was charged with one count of first degree murder, 18 USC 1111, two counts of robbery under 18 USC 2111, and unlawful use of a firearm during the crime of violence, which is 18 USC 924 C1A. She was arrested on those charges and will serve a life sentence for her involvement in this case. She was not charged with kidnapping because, you know, she's the one that stood by the woods.
Right.
And then she also had to forfeit her firearm, which I say big whoop.
Well, yeah.
I mean, that, you know.
Duh. Yeah.
That's it. So Hyder, when she was interviewed by the police, you know, she's like, I'm going to do time, right? And then, you know, I want to know how much time. And so, well Hyder.
While this guy's laying dying, right? Didn't she, wasn't that later? Yeah, when the police arrived and she said that? Yeah.
Yeah. So 21-year-old Hyder, she'll spend 35 years behind bars after pleading guilty to second-degree murder under 18 USC 1111, kidnapping under 18 USC 1201, and robbery under 18 USC 2111. And she will have followed by several years of supervised release. So those are the charges that those two faced.
Yeah, and because this was on the U.S. Forest Service, jurisdiction fell to federal jurisdiction for trying them and for charging them. And one thing that we both saw as far as the kid, you mentioned that Pinkins was arrested for child endangerment, but that was from a deputy sheriff, and that would have been a state charge. And that's kind of something that was the quickest and easiest thing to pick her up on the scene. And we never saw anything that said that Pinkins had that charge or was convicted of that charge. And my guess is that just they dropped that because she was going away for life anyway for the federal charges.
Right. And we never did hear anything else about the child. Never saw or read anything about that either.
A forest in the mountains isn't the first place you'd suspect an armed robbery to take place, but you never know when or where someone might decide you look like an easy mark or an unarmed victim. And you might think, well, just because Adam was armed, you know, a lot of good that did him. But if Adam Simji didn't have the presence of mind to carry his gun with him while he and Michaela were hiking, police might very well have been investigating a double homicide with no leads or eyewitnesses to go on. And so just as Michaela said, he was definitely a hero. Okay, well, that's it for this episode. Stay safe in wild places and watch out for the company you keep.
And if you see something, say something.
That's right.